Welcome to History in a Year, America's first 250 years.
Join us every single day as we journey from the Revolution of 1776 to the 250th anniversary of the United States.
You can find every episode and join the discussion at pointedwords.com. I'm Stephen.
And I'm Leah.
It is January 24th. Welcome to episode 24. Yesterday, we looked at the disaster of the 1780s, the critical period. We saw a weak central government, worthless money, and trade wars between states.
But for most people, weak government was just an abstract political problem. It was something politicians argued about in coffee houses. It didn't affect their daily lives. Until it did.
In 1786, the crisis stopped being abstract. It became violent. And it happened in the cradle of the Revolution, Massachusetts.
To understand Shays' rebellion, you have to understand the economy of 1786. It was a depression. The war had destroyed trade. There was very little hard currency, gold or silver, circulating in the countryside.
The farmers in western Massachusetts were hurting. These men were the backbone of the Revolution. They were the Minutemen who had stood at Lexington and Concord. They were the veterans who had frozen at Valley Forge.
They had fought for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But when they got home, they found something else waiting for them. Debt.
They had been paid for their military service in Continental paper money, which, as we discussed, was worthless. But now, the state of Massachusetts had to pay off its own war debts to wealthy merchants in Boston.
So the state government raised taxes, and they demanded that these taxes be paid in specie hard gold or silver coin.
This was impossible. The farmers didn't have gold. They barely had enough cash to buy seed. They operated on a barter system, trading corn for shoes or wood for tools.
When they couldn't pay, the courts stepped in. Sheriffs began seizing their property. They took their cattle. They took their furniture. They took their land.
And if that wasn't enough, they threw the farmers into debtors' prison. Imagine the irony. You fight a war for 8 years against tyranny, and 5 years later, you are rotting in a stinking jail cell because you can't pay a tax to the government you created.
The farmers petitioned the government in Boston for relief. They asked for paper money. They asked for stay laws to delay the foreclosures. But the commercial elite in Boston, led by Governor James Bowdoin, ignored them. They called the farmers lazy and knaves.
So, the farmers did exactly what they had done in 1776. They organized.
They started meeting in town halls. They drilled on the village greens. They called themselves regulators because they wanted to regulate the government.
And they found a leader, a man named Daniel Shays.
Shays is a tragic figure. He wasn't a radical anarchist. He was a war hero. He had joined the army at the very beginning. He fought at Bunker Hill. He fought at Ticonderoga. He fought at Saratoga.
He was a captain. The Marquis de Lafayette had personally presented Shays with a ceremonial sword as a mark of honor for his bravery. But after the war, Shays was broke. He had to sell that sword just to feed his family.
At first, Shays tried to calm things down. He didn't want violence. But as the courts kept seizing farms, he was swept up in the anger.
The strategy was simple. If the courts are closed, they can't sign the foreclosure papers. No judge, no eviction.
On August 29th, 1786, the rebellion began. Shays led hundreds of armed men to the courthouse in Northampton. They marched in military formation. They wore sprigs of hemlock, an evergreen branch, in their hats as a uniform, a symbol of liberty.
They blocked the doors. The judges arrived, saw the muskets, and turned around. The court was shut down.
It worked, and it spread like wildfire. Mobs of farmers shut down courts in Worcester, Concord, Taunton, and Great Barrington.
The wealthy merchants in Boston were terrified. They looked at these farmers and saw anarchy. They saw the end of property rights. They screamed to the national government, "Do something! Send the army!"
But here is the crucial part, the part that changed history. The national government couldn't do anything.
The Confederation Congress was sitting in New York. The Secretary of War, Henry Knox, the old artillery general, wanted to send troops. But there were no troops. The Continental Army had been disbanded, except for a tiny guard of about 80 men at West Point in Pittsburgh.
Knox asked Congress to raise a new army. Congress said, "We don't have any money." They asked the states for money. The states said no.
It was humiliating. A group of rebels was dismantling a state government, and the United States was powerless to stop it. Henry Knox wrote a frantic letter to George Washington saying, "This is a formidable rebellion. We are in a state of fearful anarchy."
So the rich merchants of Boston took matters into their own hands. If the government wouldn't protect them, they would protect themselves.
They passed a hat around the private clubs of Boston. They raised roughly 6,000 pounds of their own money and hired a mercenary army.
They hired about 3,000 militia and put General Benjamin Lincoln, yes, the same guy from Yorktown and Charleston, in command. It was a private army paid for by the elite to crush the poor.
The climax came in January 1787. Shays and his men, about 1,200 of them, decided they needed more weapons. They set their sights on the federal arsenal in Springfield, Massachusetts.
The arsenal held 450 tons of military stores, 7,000 muskets, ammunition, and cannons. If Shays got those weapons, he could march on Boston and possibly overthrow the state government.
On January 25th, 1787, Shays marched his men toward the arsenal. It was freezing cold. The snow was 4 feet deep.
Defending the arsenal was a local militia commanded by General William Shepard. He had about 900 men. And he had cannons.
Shays, men marched in columns, 8 men wide. They looked like the old Continental Army, ragged, determined, carrying their old muskets.
General Shepard shouted for them to stop. They kept coming. He fired warning shots over their heads. They kept coming.
Shays was betting that the militia wouldn't fire on their own neighbors. These men had fought together against the British. He didn't think they would kill each other.
He was wrong. When the rebels got within 100 yards, General Shepard gave the order. Fire grape shot.
The cannons roared. They fired directly into the center of the rebel column.
4 men were killed instantly. 20 were wounded. The snow was stained red.
The rebels stopped. They were stunned. This wasn't a protest anymore. This was war. And they had just been fired upon by their countrymen.
Panic set in. The rebels broke ranks and ran. They shouted, "Murder!" as they fled into the woods. Shays tried to rally them, but it was over.
General Lincoln's mercenary army arrived a few days later and chased the remnants of Shays, forced through a blizzard. They captured about 150 men. Shays escaped to Vermont.
The rebellion was crushed, militarily. But politically, it was an earthquake.
George Washington was at Mount Vernon reading the newspaper reports with horror. He was mortified. He wrote to Henry Knox, "Good God, are we to have the goodly fabric that 8 years were spent in raising pulled over our heads?"
Washington realized that his rope of sand metaphor was real. If 1,000 farmers could nearly capture a federal arsenal and topple a state government, the American experiment was doomed.
He wrote to James Madison, "We are fast verging to anarchy and confusion."
Before Shays's rebellion, Washington had refused to attend the upcoming political convention in Philadelphia. He said he was retired. He didn't want to risk his reputation on a political meeting that might fail.
But Shays' rebellion changed his mind. He realized that without his presence, the convention would lack legitimacy. He realized he had to go. He had to save the country one more time.
Shays' rebellion failed as a military operation, but it succeeded in changing history. It frightened the founding fathers, the wealthy, property-owning class, so much that they decided to scrap the Articles of Confederation and start over.
They realized that liberty was important, but order was essential. They needed a government strong enough to keep the peace.
So in May 1787, the delegates began to gather in Philadelphia. The mood was serious. They weren't just tweaking the laws anymore. They were on a rescue mission.
Join us tomorrow for episode 25. The convention begins. 55 men gather in a hot room in Philadelphia, swear an oath of secrecy, and lock the doors. And the first thing they do is overthrow their own government.
I'm Leah.
And I'm Stephen. You can find every episode at pointedwords.com, and this is our story.